Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Hot Plate. This is Mirella. I'm delighted to announce that Hot Plate has joined the Frequency Podcast Network, and we're busy working on season 2, which will be released in the new year. In the meantime, we've recorded a special holiday treat. Today on Hot Plate, we talk big birds and hangovers and share 2 easy recipes you can make to be the star of your next holiday party. Hello, Josh Nye.
Hello.
Oh, it's been a while.
Indeed. When's the last time we were here doing this?
I think it was July, our last recording session.
Way back in the hot, hot summer.
Oh.
That's not what's happening right now. It is good and cold out there.
It is freezing.
Oh.
I can't wait for snow, though.
I know, it makes it all more tolerable, I think, with the snow. I'm into it.
It does. So what have you been up to?
The biggest bit has been finishing up my book.
Yes.
Lots of excitement. It is called Take Back the Tray.
Take Back the Tray. Woo!
And it is, Amazon presale is up already.
Oh, really?
It's up.
Oh, good.
But it will be in the world in May of next year.
Okay.
So we're finishing up all those details. Can be a bit intense.
What stage are you at right now?
Right now, I have just received the final hard copy of proof edited manuscript for one more once over for me.
Okay.
I will spend the holidays with a hard copy on the west coast of Croatia doing one last edit.
That sounds quite civilized.
I'm into it a lot. Surely a glass of wine will be involved.
Or beer.
Thank you. And then other than that, this semester has been teaching. That's why I'm calling them all semesters. I've had 2 classes of joyful, joyful times. Students are amazing. I love it a lot. Last class is tomorrow night. And then we're off for holiday fun. But tell me what you have been doing.
Oh, I've been working on a number of projects.
Yeah.
But the 2 main ones, one is a hop terroir project.
Oh.
So when you think of terroir, usually you think of like wine.
Sure.
You know, like how the climate and the soil
story.
Impacts
yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
grapes. So there are a lot of people now doing work on hops and terroir.
Nice.
And the idea with all these IPAs where the hop is your main note,
yep.
that if the soil does impact the flavor of those hops, then Ontario-grown hops will result in different beers than hops grown somewhere else.
Surely,
so,
yeah.
Super fun project. I was taking care of the sensory, and I think there's going to be a write-up in the Globe and Mail shortly.
Oh, fantastic.
And the other big thing I'm working on is an app that's trying to create a Netflix-like algorithm. So, you know, if you buy 3 different beers, like which other beers might you like?
Oh, that would be so helpful.
And it's an app that it exists in Quebec. It's called Beer & Co. and it's going to launch in Ontario soon. So,
all right.
Really fun stuff.
That is fun stuff.
Yeah.
And like proper us stuff.
Yes.
It's exciting to do the thing that you want to do, right?
True. So the holidays are fast approaching.
They are. And, lots to talk about.
A huge part of the holidays is food.
Of course.
I don't know about you, but
of course.
Yeah, it's central.
Indeed.
And actually, I was wondering what you usually eat around the
holidays.
For
my family, it's mostly a mishmash of all of our favorite things. Some Indian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like Indian hors d'oeuvres and snacks and things. We actually do less of sitting down at a big table full of food and more of just putting things out to graze.
Just constant snacking.
Snacking and consumption.
I
it starts
that.
On Christmas Eve and goes right through to Boxing Day. And we are all like stretchy pants and board games and movies.
Oh, wow.
Amidst that. One tradition is I bake scones on Christmas morning.
That sounds delightful.
And we crack open a jar of jam that was preserved in the summer before. Like Christmas is the deep enough into winter where we're going to crack into preserves.
So it's all just all your favorite things.
It's all our favorite things. Yeah.
That's delightful.
It's really great.
Well, in my family, historically, it's been extremely traditional. So the complete opposite, but a marriage of 2 traditions.
Nice.
So we also eat many of our favorite things.
Yes.
So on the French-Canadian side, that includes turkey and stuffing
and
potatoes
all
and all that.
Okay.
And cranberry sauce, which we call atoka. And I just looked it up recently because it's French-Canadian slang for cranberries. And apparently it's a native term. It's the native term for cranberries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
that
we have
sense.
That. We also have tortillère. And then because a whole portion of the family is Italian, we also have pasta.
That's awesome.
And meatballs. Yes. This is all in one meal.
That's so great. Yeah. Tortilla, turkey, and pasta and meatballs?
Yeah. Fantastic. And then, you know, there's the traditional sweets at the end. Oh, so we do the grazing as well.
I love it.
It's an all-day affair.
It's outrageous and amazing.
But I wanted to linger on the turkey a little bit because I came across an article, and the article is about why do we like turkey so much and why do we eat so much food around the holidays?
Why the like the gluttonousness is part of it, right?
Yeah. Overeating. And the article actually came out with American Thanksgiving, but it's about turkey.
Sure.
So the headline was, does the brain trick you into thinking food tastes better on Thanksgiving or during the holidays? And it's based on the research of this dude called Don Katz, who is an expert in behavioral neuroscience and studies gustatory perception in learning. So basically, he's just trying to figure out, why do things taste good?
And what cues we get or give around food.
And it was interesting. I shared the article with you. So his theory is that the reason we enjoy turkey is more than just its flavor. And he points out that turkey and potatoes are actually quite bland.
Right, exactly.
And in many, I really like turkey. It's not bland to me.
From a culinary perspective, we're always just like, oh God, with the turkey because it's such a lean meat.
Right.
Right. And we know lesson one in cooking school is that fat carries flavor.
Okay.
Right. And so the turkey is tricky. This is why you got people deep frying the thing and wrapping it in bacon and doing all these sorts of nutty things, because it's because the general population gets a bit panicky about cooking this giant bird, that they almost always overcook it.
Interesting.
Right? So there's a guaranteed dryness, which is why a giant boat of gravy arrives to moisten things up.
Right.
Right? So the curiosity.
You do need that gravy.
We are really dedicated to the ritual and tradition of that bird, not because it tastes so delicious. Right? There's something more, right?
I feel like I'm being tricked because I do think it's delicious.
And you're like, but I love it.
So Don Katz has been doing a lot of work with rats.
Right.
And his whole working premise is the idea that how we taste things or whether something tastes good to us extends beyond what it actually tastes like. And it extends to things like if we see other people enjoying it. Or if we see other people eating it. So he did this test with rats. Rats apparently don't like cocoa because it's bitter.
Right.
So he, and this is not very nice, took one rat and starved it a little bit.
Yes.
And then he fed it some cocoa and it ate it because it was
hungry
starving.
And that was it.
And then he put another rat together with this rat and apparently how rats say hello is by smelling each other's breaths.
I know, I love that part.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like dogs, but intimate greeting.
I know, exactly. Okay.
Wouldn't it be funny if that's the way how we greet each other?
I think it would be hilarious.
Interesting.
We just a little breathy on each other. Woo.
So anyway, this other rat who had not been starved smelled the cocoa on the other rat's breath and then was completely happy to eat cocoa, which it normally would not have eaten. His whole idea is that, our taste buds are not only about the flavor and our appreciation of the flavor, but also about, is this safe? And it's part of like a larger
set. Yeah, there's a safety
of signals.
Piece. Yep.
And once we know it's safe, we're just hardwired to accept it as tasting better. So I guess the idea is because Thanksgiving is a happy time and everyone's eating turkey and everyone's overeating, then we feel that it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and it somehow feels good.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like it's the same logic behind commercials. Right? You see people happily drinking this thing or eating this thing, you're like, I want to be happy like those people.
Right.
Right? I feel like that's the spirit of it is very much the same.
That must be what's behind it.
I think there's got to be some of that, right? You recognize the good life that's available to you if you bought this thing and started eating or drinking it. Right? I think that's what they're suggesting. When I read the piece, I loved, I think it makes good sense and it was really interesting. Also, I love this whole rats and the breath introduction thing. It was very sweet. But one of the things that seemed so sweet about it was that there was all of these really sort of scientific bits supporting the notion of what I recognize essentially as conviviality.
Right.
Right. And the reason that we enjoy it is because there's good times around the table. It's about sharing food with other people. Right. And it just so happens that, unfortunately, we live in a world where the Thanksgiving meal is one of the only times that you are necessarily at a table with that many of your ideally loved ones or friends and family, people you like. So that those the opportunity for having those experiences are so rare that we, I think, are more inclined to preserve the tradition of the and are think that it's because of the turkey and the stuffing and the carrots and the, right? When I don't think that it is. I think it's about the company and the context, mostly because my Indian family's Thanksgiving hardly ever had a turkey.
Right. Yeah, you're coming at it from a very different perspective.
We never, ever had a turkey, but the love of all of us together was really what the magic of Thanksgiving was.
And I think what's interesting about this article and the science is that conviviality actually impacts our taste buds.
I did like that.
We perceive. And fascinating because I do think turkey is delicious and you're, you know, not partial to it, but it's not something that you have regularly for the holidays.
Not at all. So not at all.
Maybe that's why.
It could be. I like this. I like this.
On to our next topic, which is holiday hangovers.
It's good. I'm very happy to talk about this. This time of year, consumption gets a boost. Mm-hmm. And in my advancing years, my hangovers are much more painful effort than they used to be.
I know.
I got to plan them out. It can't just happen anymore.
I find sometimes I'll just have one beer and the next day I feel
it's a
rough.
Sadness. Because you can remember a version of you that did a much better performance, right? Yeah.
And the interesting thing about hangovers is that we don't really exactly know scientifically on a granular level what causes them. There are a number of different theories that I have read. Obviously, too much alcohol.
Right. That's a clear
what causes them. But, you know, people are always looking for hangover cures.
Cure, indeed.
And there's no straight line to a hangover cure because we don't know the science.
We haven't isolated the problem necessarily.
That being said, yet another organization has attempted to crack the code. Can I say that?
I like it.
Okay. And so this is a product that was developed by a Stanford Medical Training Program graduate.
Oh, no. I read that too and I was like, okay, Stanford. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So the product is called capital S, small O, big B, small A, small R.
Right.
And it only hit me a couple of seconds ago that it's called Sober.
Oh, Sober. That just hit me right now.
Because you're reading it on the page.
Yeah.
And what it is it's like a power bar.
Yes.
And it is relatively low calorie, I think 200 calories.
Right.
I'm not a calorie counter.
Me neither,
I don't know if that's a lot of calories.
It's an average sort of snack calorie count.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's protein rich. And the idea is that if you eat this, it'll slow the absorption of alcohol in your system. Apparently, the gentleman who developed this bar was at a wedding and drank way too much, had a horrible
on
morning.
On his empty stomach.
Yeah.
Right.
And thought, I need to address this.
So I thought it was really fascinating because the idea, I have firsthand experience of what happens when you drink on an empty stomach.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like a real thing, right?
It is.
That it goes, you get to that reception after work and you start drinking champagne, all right? And you haven't had nearly enough of the cheese and crackers that are also there, right? And you can feel it right to your head
super fast. It hits you a lot more quickly.
It absolutely does. And you also know that when you like are at the bar super tipsy and then you go and have the poutine, that things really calm down a little, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That it sort of angles itself down.
That's right. So the idea is that if you have food in your stomach, it slows the absorption of alcohol. I would hesitate to say that it will prevent the hangover because you're still getting ingesting
the same amount
of alcohol.
Because it doesn't seem to address. The two questions I had were, how does the bar actually address the residual impact of the alcohol, because that's really where the hangover action starts. And I feel like there wasn't enough talk about at what point in the drinking. Like, is this a prophylactic? Like, do you eat this bar and then start drinking? Can you eat the bar at any moment in the course of your drinking?
Right.
Is there, like, will this only be effective for 5 drinks, right? Or, you know, is there a point where your consumption is too great that this is a sort of negligible bit of nonsense? I feel like there wasn't enough information there.
Well, these are all valid questions. Starting at the beginning, so the notion is that when you eat food, it slows your absorption of alcohol. So it won't hit you as quickly.
Yeah.
You absorb it a little bit more slowly. And so, therefore, you're probably less
and metabolizing it
because you're metabolizing it at the same time. And so they did a test, one with people on empty stomachs, and I feel sorry for them, one with people eating a full hearty meal and one with people eating the bar. And they found that the people who obviously who were drinking on empty stomach, the alcohol hit them a lot harder. And I think the people with the full meal, the alcohol didn't hit them as hard. But then he turns to the notion that this is, you know, 200 calories.
Mm-hmm.
So much more, I guess, efficient and compact than a full meal.
Right.
And
the density of it. Yes.
But so question number one for me.
Yeah.
You've just had 3 old fashions and now you're counting calories.
I know. Like,
just put food in your mouth.
Right? It is really funny.
And also to your point about, you know, prophylactic or preventive, mm-hmm. like, you need to have this bar in your, like, if you can have the foresight to know that you're going to need this bar, can't you just have the foresight to eat something?
This is my question. Now, maybe it's helpful. I have been in scenarios in my life where surprise drunkenness was a thing. Right? You're like, and now we're drunk. Maybe that.
So
maybe
I guess
that's
the idea
it.
Would be that would be in your purse for those moments.
Right. Now, I will say, I played a game like this in university, mm-hmm. except for my idea was focusing on the hangover as a result of the dehydration as a result of excessive alcohol consumption.
Yeah.
Right. This is the 20-year-old version of me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we heard somewhere that effervescent vitamin C tablets could take in. So you put a couple in like Alka-Seltzer kind of vibe.
Yes.
Right. In a glass and 2 or 3 glasses of water worth. Before the drinking starts.
Okay.
Right? That boosts your hydration. The vitamin C does that job so that on the other end of it, it's a much smoother exit.
Yeah.
Right? Because you've leaned into, you know, what's about to happen. You know that some major drinking is going to, so that you've set it all up. And time again, that worked.
Well, you know, dehydration is a very real concern when consuming alcohol, as is vitamin depletion.
Right.
So that makes sense that would work. And I feel like those are more effective and to the point tactics than this bar, which is essentially just a replacement for food and or common sense.
Right.
And as you, because sidebar, what kind of wedding was this guy at that he was drinking on an empty stomach? I don't understand. I've never been to a wedding with an open bar that didn't also have tons of food available.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
Well, and we're kind of
anyway. Get yourself to some food. You asked about, does it impact the hangover? And I'm not so sure that it does. Again, the mechanics, we don't know. So it is possible that if your alcohol is being absorbed more slowly, even if it's the same amount of alcohol, maybe
there's
you'll
a
feel
steadiness,
a tad less rough in the morning, but probably you won't feel fine.
I will advocate very effectively for the effervescent vitamin C prophylactically.
Yes.
If this is going to happen, we know consumption is a thing, particularly with New Year's Eve, right, which is the one night a year mm-hmm. where we all sort of give ourselves a green light to drink it up. It works, but do it before. Think about giving a gift from your present self to your future self, right? Like, just do it before the drinking starts, because that is, I think, the only way to really impact the intensity of that hangover.
For sure. I'm envisioning like a little self-care kit in the corner with water, vitamin C.
Right?
Vitamin B is also incredibly
good. I like it a lot.
A couple of power bars.
Yeah.
Voila.
And then you're ready to pound them back.
Although power bars and champagne?
Yeah.
No. So it's time for some holiday treats.
Yippee!
Are you ready?
I am. I love it when you bring things in a flask.
Listen to
that. I like the audio of that pour very much. Thank you.
So this, as you will notice,
is warm. The smelling is coming back to me these days. Oh, this is warm and lovely. What is happening here?
So what this is, for all intents and purposes, is a mulled beer.
Okay.
But it's not really a mulled beer. It's a posset
I've heard of this.
You have?
I have heard of this.
What have you heard?
I've heard it in reading old English stories and stuff. Okay, so I've always understood that it was some sort of doctored up beer.
It's from Elizabethan England.
Okay.
So you're dead on there.
Got it.
And it can be made with either beer or wine, traditionally. And I said sort of a posset, because the idea of a posset is a cream curdled in wine or beer.
That's what the cook inside of me knows posset as,
right,
a sort of custardy kind of thing. Right.
I'm not keen on curdling.
Me neither.
So this is essentially a mulled beer, but also with egg whipped into it. So you've
got yolks or whole?
Just the yolk. So there's a little yolk in there, some sugar, a brandy, of course.
You can sense the richness. I haven't even tasted it yet, and I can tell that this is even just the thickness of how it looked when it poured.
I'm excited to know what you think.
I love this. Oh, that's good.
It's lovely.
Oh, it's really good. Tell me what spices and stuff are happening in here.
There is clove.
Mm-hmm.
Ginger,
mm-hmm,
and nutmeg.
Yes.
And that's it. Honey, brown sugar, and then the yolk.
That is great.
Oh, and lemon rind. I like to offset anything sweet with a little bit of bitterness. And I brewed this, I cooked this with a dark ale base. And I think that's the most challenging part of this recipe is finding a dark ale these days that isn't super hoppy. That's
okay.
Difficult.
Okay.
Yep. So I made this with Amsterdam Downtown Brown. Pretty easy to find, but any brown ale works.
Man, I like the nuance of that bitter finish.
Mm-hmm.
Very pleasing.
Oh.
I can taste the lemon zest, and it balances it out really, because otherwise it would be super sweet.
Yes.
Right? Which, as we know, will take us right into hangover land. Right?
There's a Moorish quality to it, and it's got a nice kick from the brandy.
And tell me, in the batch, how many yolks?
Just one yolk. So two cans of beer.
Just a little bit.
And the yolk whipped in with the sugar. Would you have put in more?
No, I think it's perfect. So you do that little nice Italian thing with the yolk and the sugar and whipping that all together.
Is that Italian?
It is. I've heard many of my Italian friends talk about being fed that as a dessert.
Interesting.
Because it's
that
like almost a Zabayon, right?
Okay.
It's like on the road to a Zabayon. Without the booze, it's a Zabayon. And they were like, my nonna would make this. They would make this sort of thing for me as a little treat.
I'm guessing that's Northern Italian, because I've never seen that.
Yeah, it was very.
But I'm quite obsessed with mulling beers in different ways.
Yeah.
My favorite mulled beer recipe is called lamb's wool.
Yeah.
Which is not a posset. It's called lamb's wool because you use the spices in the beer and baked apples, and the apples break down and give you an appearance like lamb's wool.
Oh, how.
Mm-hmm. So sweet. That recipe is already on my website, but we'll share the recipe for this tasty treat.
Make this for yourselves, my friends.
Mm.
And it's a lovely thing to just graze and sip on.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's the perfect bit here. Yum.
Well, this is the whole. Why am I having trouble saying Elizabethan today?
It's sort of
Elizabeth.
Yeah.
I can do it. So the whole Elizabethan, wassailing tradition.
Of course.
Which I thought was just going door to door and singing, but apparently it extends beyond that to just drinking warm alcoholic beverages and having a good time.
Because I think the thought was that you would be met at the door with a cup of something boozy, right? And that was the payment for your services and hopefully contributing to the joviality of the situation.
For sure.
Yeah.
And just another fun fact that I came across in my research with the posset, they think that it's the predecessor to eggnog.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And if this was made with cream, then
it would
the traditional method.
Noggy.
I'm sure it's very close.
Love it.
But yes, a recipe you can add to your collection.
I love that. Thank you. Yum.
It's warming.
Okay. So it's no surprise that I have brought you sweets as my favorite. For me, this time is about baking and sort of unrestricted use of sweet things. So these are things that the last few years have become favorites. I'm calling them date snowballs.
Interesting.
So essentially what I've done is made a date caramel, right, with a bit of brown sugar, some maple syrup and butter, and a paste of ground up of pureed dates. Dried dates.
Yeah, right? Very seasonal.
Exactly. And then we mix that with Rice Krispies.
Oh.
Once we make the date caramel and it bubbles nicely, you mix it with Rice Krispies, you let it cool, key piece because it's still liquid sugar.
Yes.
Which is deathly hot. And then once it cools, you form it into balls and then just roll it in powdered sugar.
Wow. So and these look almost like little rum balls to me, but
very
they're whiter.
Yeah. And then there's
the
a crispiness.
Sugar is very white.
I love these because they're clearly seasonal and festive, mm-hmm. but they also are naturally gluten-free.
Nice.
Which is a wonderful piece to just sort of have out there so that mm-hmm. everybody can enjoy a sweets table or a gifting. I am really big on consumable gifts.
Oh, yeah.
Right? We have enough stuff. And if you want to give gifts, I feel like just in a little bag that can go into the compost heap after and we're done, right?
Yes.
So this is a classic piece that
I'm reaching
gift.
For one.
Yes, do it.
I'm really intrigued by the Rice Krispies. I feel like that's a textural.
It is definitely a textural element.
I love your attention to texture.
The mouthful means a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do I put the whole thing in?
I say go for it.
All right, I'm doing it. Love the Rice Krispies.
Yeah. It works. I did, to be full disclosure, because I knew I was coming to see you. I actually pulled back on some of the sugar
mm-hmm.
because I know that you are not such a fan of super sweetie. And as it is, these things get rolled in powdered sugar.
Yeah.
So I pulled back a little and you could keep going as long as you have enough sugar to build that caramel.
So run the ingredients by me again. So there's dates.
A pureed. So dates that get processed in mm-hmm. food processor till a thick paste.
Yes.
In a pot mm-hmm. with butter and sugar.
Okay, so it's the butter that's coming through.
And you cook that down till it becomes homogenous and starts bubbling in this sort of thick swamp monster kind of way.
Mm.
And then that just gets poured over the Rice Krispies, and you do hear the snap, crackly, pop. Stir it together, let it cool, and then form it into, with wet hands, roll it into a ball and in powdered sugar.
Have you ever made this into squares?
Never, but I'm sure that would work beautifully.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little soft. I don't know if it would hold its the
as it
structure
dries out,
of...
As it dries out. You're getting them incredibly fresh because I made them this morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that because I have these around for about 2 weeks while I'm packing up gifties. And the later ones, it's a firmer caramel.
Because to me, I would feel like this would be greater than a Rice Krispie square.
Yes.
It's not quite as sweet. It's got
totally.
A little bit more richness. I love that. I don't know how much butter is in here, but it says
it's
hello.
It's generous. And
it's
to be honest, I experimented this this batch, and I thought, what would this be like if we brown the butter a little bit and develop the nuttiness in the butter? Because you can also, the recipe calls for very finely chopped nuts, but that can be a bit of an allergen problem sometimes. So I keep them out. But browning the butter gives you a sort of elevated Rice Krispie vibe.
I'm going to wash this down with a little posset, and I feel like this is going to be a killer combo.
Oh, God, I think you're right. I'm going to join you.
Yep. That is a killer combo.
Together,
isn't
it? It's very good.
Yes.
It's very good. Folks, you will all want a taste of this.
And we will post both recipes on our website.
Yes.
And can they fit in the show notes? Yeah.
Perfect.
We're going to fit them in.
We're going to fit them in. Make these for your people for your next holiday party. You will be a hit. Low waste and lots of delicious good times.
I do love, Josh, now your idea about edible and consumable
it's gotta be
gifts.
That way. Yeah.
There are so many options. I've seen really cool packages out there where you can basically put together all of the dry sections of a cookie, for example, and then put it in a mason jar.
Yeah,
and
it's the best. You just need some butter and eggs.
A cute little cookie cutter. And that makes for a wonderful, fun gift. It also gives the receiver a little bit of work to do.
Right.
It's a different approach, but for the right person, that's a really fun
gift. I think it's super perfect. This the eating and enjoying edible things is really what the season is all about. So just share that around everybody and forget about the stress of that other gift.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
That's it.
If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave a rating or review. It helps others find us. Hot Plate is part of the Frequency Podcast Network. Original music by Dave Bell. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hot Plate Pod. Follow me at Beerology on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And follow Joshna at Joshna Maharaj on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Hot Plate is produced by Mirella Amato, that's me, and Dennis Coyne. Thanks for listening.